much, Linda, for having me, and Rachel and Marina. I've had a lot of fun here. And I mean, I'm not talking about surfactants. I'm very sorry about that. And worse than that, I'm actually going to, I mean, the main thing that I want to do today is I want to prove the obvious about a very simple equation. And on the positive side, that means that I might actually be able to explain how the proof goes. So this is joint work with Marina, who's been co-organizing, and Benjamin Stephen. And I'm wondering whether you met Ben. I know that he interviewed at Bucknell some years ago. Yes, so perhaps before your time, who is also in Toronto. So, I mean, just I shouldn't really be saying this in this audience, but when we say thin film equation, we mean equations of a form like that. So there's a du by dt evolution equation, fourth order equations, and I don't have a stick, but I think you can sort of follow. There is a stick. Where? Ah, it's really excellent. Very good. So the interesting, right? The interesting thing about this equation is you have this nonlinearity u to the n up here, and I mean, I'm just an analyst. I accept that this is the equation that people like to use, and so that's fine by me. And so it says du by dt equals the divergence of u to the power n by the gradient of the Laplacian of u. So the green doesn't come up, huh? So I will read everything that's green. And then, so u is the thickness of the fluid. The fourth derivative term has to do with surface tension. I say a little bit more about that later. And this exponent n is determined by the boundary conditions between the liquid, solid, and air. And the one that people like to use, the n equals 3, and whenever they write n equals c, they say no slip. So, good. So the model that we actually look at, again, the important thing is in green, and I will read it. It's, again, an evolution equation. There's an x derivative, u to the power 3, u cubed, and then here you have three spatial derivatives, u, x, x, x. Let me actually write it in chalk here. And then if I get my sines and cosines right. And I think there's one more term. And just the picture is roughly like this. You have a horizontal cylinder lying like this. It's supposed to rotate very slowly around this axis, so it's lying. It's rotating about its axis. There's a thin film about it. It sort of accumulates on the bottom. And the green terms here, these are the surface tension terms. This has to do with gravity, and this has to do with the speed of rotation. And we have periodic boundary conditions. That's all it says. It's an old model, first written down by Moffat, without the surface tension terms. And what he claims he was trying to model is how to get the honey from the pot onto your roll. And so he puts the knife into the pot, pulls it out, and because the honey wants to run down, he rotates it so that it stays up. And so the expectation here would be somehow that the speed of rotation has something to do with how much of the honey you hold. And then the full model that I wrote here is Puchnachev's model, and it appears in other places too. So it's an interesting equation that appears in more than one place. Okay, so let me just tell you what we actually prove. I told you we're going to prove the obvious, yeah? So we are actually going to switch off rotation, so the thing's stationary. And then the obvious thing is what's going to happen? Well, gravity is just going to pull it down and then makes a droplet at the bottom. Yeah, so that's what we prove. And so here it says the first is we say for every mass there's a unique energy minimizer in green. It is globally attractive in the sense I just said, no matter how you start, that's where you go. And then one interesting thing that we find is that yes, it does converge, but it cannot converge faster than power law. And ultimately, the cause for that is the following thing, that this energy minimizer that we find has a dry region. And it has to have that. If I write the energy for you, let me just write the energy. So again, x is angle, right? So this term is the gravity term. That's exactly the potential of gravity. Now, this term here is the surface tension term. Let me make a small comment on that. This is the term that everybody is used to see. What I want to say is that this actually here is a geometric term. And let me just explain a little bit why it is what it is. I mean, it's an instability. There's a minus here. And if you think about this, so here's the fluid, and then here is, you know, the actual cylinder inside. I'm, of course, exaggerating, right? The fluid is pretty thick for a thin film here. But now imagine that I actually, I mean, what's surface tension? It has to do something with surface tension is trying to reduce surface area. By surface area, meaning the outer surface. But now you see I can wiggle this guy around in the middle a little bit without changing the outer surface. And if I wiggle like that, that's like a perturbation with a sine or a cosine in x. But if I have a sine or a cosine, that gives me a zero contribution here. Yeah? So that's this term here is exactly the geometric term that comes from the fact that I'm on a cylinder. Yeah, so it's a natural instability. Can even call it long wave instability if you want. By the way, what you can also see from this term here, immediately you see that if I don't put positivity constraints, so the solutions of course want to be non-negative, if I do not put that constraint, that energy is unbounded below. And because it's unbounded below means of course that the constraint must be active, but that the constraint must be active means exactly that you have to have dry spots. Yeah? And so basically, we got started by thinking about what the minimizers of this energy would like under this look like under this constraint. And at first sight, you think that this is a complicated problem because you don't know how many droplets there are and what the boundary conditions are and so on and so on. And then you realize, well, it's actually not hard at all because there's a classical symmetrization procedure that you can do. Whenever you have a profile U and you replace it by a symmetric profile, you make money. Energy goes down. And once you know that, you know exactly that this is to be it. That becomes an exercise becomes an exercise to get these guys. What I want to say, why am I calling these results related? So the Cagliari-Toscani result, the reason why we thought about this is a positive result about power law decay for an equation that doesn't have all these decorations on it. Yeah. Difference, it converges to, you get convergence to a constant steady state. Akar and Ulus saw other results on speed of convergence. All these are positive results on speed of convergence, but they are power laws. So what I'm somehow trying to say that maybe the power law is right. And finally, Giacometti, Knipfer, and Otto is related because it's also in a very interesting way related because they honestly look at the dynamics of droplets. And so I can say a little bit more about that later. Yes? Yes. Oh, you can, there are things that you can integrate out. So the very first thing is that, so you set this equal to zero, so this thing has to be constant, and then you don't get a fourth order thing. That's right. So what it is, this energy does decrease along the flow, but it doesn't decrease as fast as possible. Yeah. So what you get, in fact, E dot, let me write here E dot here, which we will use later, equals minus integral U cubed, and then you have the term that you think you have, this term here, UXXX plus UX minus sine X. Squared dx. Yeah. So it in other words, energy does decrease, but it's not a steepest descent flow, at least not in our standard function spaces. And so, I mean, that's actually a question. You know, can I change the topology of my space in such a way that it becomes? And that's an interesting question. Yeah. So that's the energy. I think that's what I just told you. The green word says energy, and there it is, right? And there's the dissipation. That's the one that I just wrote. So, I mean, at this point, you really think that it's completely obvious that you have to converge to the minimizer. Why? Well, because, I mean, this term with a minus is obviously a negative term. Yeah, and so when can it be zero? Well, in order for it to be zero, basically this has to be zero. That's precisely the Euler-Lagrange equation. And then there's, of course, the question of boundary conditions, whether you satisfy those or not. Yeah, so you can ask yourself whether profiles that have this equal to zero but have a non-zero contact angle are in fact steady states or not. Yeah. So that's basically coming running again through our results, right? So for every value of the mass, by the way, I didn't say that, but we put actually in some extra parameters. So the first of one we did is we allow n to be values other than 3. And the second is we allow this alpha, this geometric parameter, to be any positive number. And the reason we do that is because it turns out that alpha equals 1 is sort of a borderline case, like we just discussed. Yeah, the cosine makes the surface tension term 0, and we thought it would be interesting to vary the alpha just so that we can see, you know, what's going on. What actually happened, amazingly, after we got heavily criticized by referees, we went into the literature and we found that, in fact, there are models where alpha is bigger than 1. So that recent papers of Kelmanson, where he has inertial effects, and in basically it leads to things where you have an equation where indeed there's a term alpha here, a coefficient alpha here is that can be bigger than 1. Yes, the alpha here is 1, so we put the alpha squared right in here. So the physical thing, it's just the coefficient in front of this instability, it's a geometric term that cannot be scaled out. Okay, so on the cylinder alpha is 1, on the flat surface alpha is 0. In a full model with variable curvature, alpha is a curvature term. And in a model where you have inertial effects, alpha is a combination of curvature terms and inertial terms. Yeah. So, I'm not really on the modeling side of things, but that's just we thought it would be interesting to give us better understanding of the case that we want to understand by moving that parameter. But in fact, it turns out that there's physical reason. So again, let me tell you, for alpha equals 1, basically our minimize is always a droplet like that with 0 contact angle. If you have alpha less than 1, then it's also possible to have a film that completely fills. Yeah? So the minimizer can look like that if the mass is big enough. As soon as you put this geometric term bigger than 1, if you have more instability, you strengthen instability, then you can actually have a guy sitting like that with 0 contact angle. And that's a saddle point of the energy. Okay? And then, but once you have these guys, they're both steady states. Once you have these guys, of course you can combine them. You just have to make sure that the combined mass is right. And so this becomes a continuum. And so this is again interesting what happens with the dynamics here. So we have no idea what happens with the dynamics there, but again, from this model that has these inertial effects, it might be a very interesting thing to look at. So basic question that, you know, very naive question. Does Lyapunov's principle apply? Energy goes down. Will our convergence minimize or not? Yeah, I mean, it would be, that's really the question. And so our answer is yes, and we know how to do this for minimizers. So in this case, where there's a unique minimizer, our answer is yes, Lyapunov's principle does apply. But, I mean, Lyapunov's principle usually is stronger when you have, for instance, an energy function with multiple steady states in Rn. Then it just tells you that any trajectory will converge to somehow to the set of minimizers. And that we don't know how to do. Yeah. So in the case where there is not a set of minima, a set of critical points. Yeah. So in other words, you don't necessarily in ODEs, you don't necessarily converge to a minimum. You might converge to a saddle. This we cannot prove when there are saddles. What we can prove is that when there's only a unique steady state, a minimizer, well, that's where it goes to. And I would say a little bit about the proof. Yes. So basically, it's the usual game, right? We have there's energy and there's entropy. So let's have a look at the entropy. So in the n equals 3, this is the u to the minus 1. You can formally compute a derivative. And you see that for the simplest syndrome equation, you get something negative. Here we're going to get some decorations. But we can bound those decorations in terms of the energy. So that means that entropy can grow at most linearly. On the same way for the class of solutions we look at, so the class of solutions we looked at, this is not quite right, but you can integrate, and the integrated identity remains right. So you get a bound here on the norm of the second derivatives in terms of the entropy and the initial entropy and things like that, and grows with time. And so, I mean, this is really very much in the spirit of the classical literature here. I could have put many others. should have put Pew and Bertozzi. And good. So now let me have the global convergence, every strong solution. So these are the solutions that have the energy and entropy inequality. They will converge in the reasonable space, the space where energy is finite, to the global energy minimizer. And so the technique is very straightforward. You see, we saw that the entropy can grow at most linearly, and the energy is bounded. What does that mean? Well, it means that when I look into the future along times, most of the time the dissipation of the energy has to be small, has to go to zero. And most of the time the entropy dissipation has to be sort of boundless. Yeah, so we pick a sequence of times so that this entropy dissipation term is bounded and the energy goes to zero. Yeah? Now when you do that, you do your usual reconvergence argument, and you see that in the limit you really have no choice but having this to be zero, because you're in the space where second derivatives exist, you're going to have zero contact angle, so the only possible candidate is the global minimizer, and that's that. Yeah? So up to here, the argument is good also for a saddle. So you get a good sequence of times where you converge to the minimizer or to a saddle, to whatever you want. Here is where we use variety minimizer. Since energy is monotone, once you're close to the minimum once, you stay close. Yeah? On a saddle, we don't know how to do this. You are energy-wise, you're close to a saddle, which means your energy is close to the saddle, but we don't know how to prevent the solution from going away and coming back. And you see that's a real, it goes to the heart of the problem somehow, because, well, how do you do it in ODEs? Well, you heavily use that you have, continuous dependence on data, but we don't have a proper well-posed theory for these sort of equations, so we don't have that. For instance, yeah, or even just one at the top, yeah, exactly. So it's one critical point is the one with the drop at the bottom, the other one is a saddle at the top, and now suppose I have a solution that at some sequence of times converges to the saddle, to the one at the top. And we don't know how to prevent it from going out and coming back in longer and longer time loops.
Going out and coming back to the unstable drop.
Yes. See, once it goes to the bottom, we win, because then the energy is down and it will stay there, right? But, I mean, what we cannot prevent solutions, we don't know how to prevent solutions, that across some sequence of times, the energy converges to the energy of the saddle, and their location converges to the location of the saddle, but then in between it goes out without losing much energy and comes back. Yeah, but you see, that could be a big, we don't know. Yeah, we just don't know. Yeah, so this is a good point, and we just don't know. And I mean, this whole idea of, you know, the understanding the dynamics, that where you say you're implicitly thinking about something where you have the well-posedness. You think about this as a proper dynamical system. Yeah, so in some sense it's technicality, but we really don't know how to do. Yeah, so and then, you know, let me just say something about our final results. So why can we only have power law decay? Well, you look at the equation. As soon as U is small, speed is small, very small. Yeah? Or let me say it another way, if I look at the entropy, S equals integral U to the minus 1, that's the N equals 3. Yeah? Dx. And this grows, and so this is less or equal A plus BT, S of T. Yeah? But now you see what this means. If this can only, if for sure it cannot become, the function cannot become zero on a big interval in finite time, because if it did, that entropy would have to blow up. But in fact, you can translate that into a sort of quantitative estimate. Yeah, so it's trying to go to zero on a big interval. Can't do that so fast, meaning it can't grow so fast. And that's basically what this here is. And as soon as there's a positive solution, then you can actually directly show that you have exponential convergence as soon as you approach. And so let me just stop with some questions here. So what's the rate of convergence really? So by the way, this is a typical time evolution. We start from a constant initial condition, That constant initial condition here, and then it sort of just evolves. And in this case, I mean, we made it symmetric, but we don't have to. It pushes up here. Zero, by the way, is the bottom of the cylinder, right? So the drop goes at the bottom. It sort of dries out at the top. And then you see what happens relatively quickly, that you get sort of the right shape here. But then this coming down, the thing of transporting the mass out, that takes time. And you can see here, this is a logarithmic plot, logarithm of time. This is the L2 norm of the distance. And you see that our bound is this, but the solution does actually this. And what we think is that perhaps the true law is something like t⁻³, but we are not able to do that. So, I mean, I think this touches on some things that Christian Zeiss has just arrived at Toronto, knows a lot of things about, and so we hope we will be able to learn something from him on this. Yeah? Just since I have, you know, other young people on the job market in my vicinity, just want to mention that your question, Michael, about is this a gradient flow? Yeah, the answer is, of course, yes, but you have to change the topology of your space. So instead of L2, you have to use these exotic spaces. When n equals 1, so when 3 is 1, then the space is very well understood. It's a classical space. Called Wasserstein space that appears in optimal transportation. The geometry is very well understood, and so there are lots of really nice works on these things. My student, PhD student graduating this year, also uses, has got some results for n equals 1 for actually a larger class of equation, has a method of, I should say one more difficulty. So first difficulty, I said, n equals 1 we understand, n equals 3 we do not understand at all the space. Some crazy space that we know nothing about. In fact, there are lots of very reasonable people who think that it's not a reasonable space at all. I mean, I think Dejan Fletcher, for instance, thinks that sometimes distance can be zero. Yeah? And the second difficulty is that, you know, the energy functional. Here, in L2, it looks very easy, just a quadratic. This guy is linear, and this guy is just a positive semi-definite quadratic form, right? So what's the problem? Obviously convex. If you go to these spaces, the convexity gets lost, and it gets lost in a really, really bad way. I mean, there's really kind of deep cover from. And so what my student somehow managed to do, he's managed to show that this function does have some convexity property that allows you, at least when you have positive initial values, to now prove these Bernice and Friedman type results using the new methods, and prove it for a larger class of equations. So let me, is that what I wanted to say? Yeah, thanks, that's it. Yes. Yeah, my favorite slide. Yes. No, it's not a minimizer. It's